Welcome to Witness Radio Broadcast Program.
Agra itself and the Gates Foundation, as well as the seed and agrochemical companies, they are false prophets of food security.
So the solution that they present is to give priority to business.
The policies that we have nowadays, we see that they support the big fish. These big fish are the commercial people. You find that the same people who are supported and protected by the policy do not even consider to produce the food.
The Food and Land Use Coalition, which is an arm of Agra, has boarded that policy's purse. All of a sudden, they are included in the policy text.
You're listening to a rebroadcast program where African faith leaders, civil society, and farmer groups are calling on the Gates Foundation for reparation of the extensive damage it's causing to Africa's food system. Anne Miner takes the floor.
Once again, welcome to this press conference. The format will begin with a moderated session where we'll bring on each spokespersons to speak on different topics. After about 45 minutes, we'll begin our segment on question and answer. So please prepare your questions through the program and submit them to the question and answer box at the bottom of your Zoom. International donors, business leaders, and African government officials gather in Kigali, Rwanda for the annual forum organized by AGRA, formerly the Alliance for a Green Revolution in Africa, until it removed its words Green Revolution from its name. The annual Green Revolution Forum has also distanced itself from the Green Revolution, now going by the name Africa Food Systems Forum. Each year since 2021, the Alliance for Food Sovereignty in Africa, AFSA, and its allies have presented evidence that the Green Revolution is harming African farmers, and we have called on African governments and donors to shift their support to more sustainable, low-input agriculture. Despite billions of dollars in subsidies and support to the Green Revolution's costly mix of commercial seeds, synthetic fertilizers, and chemical pesticides, yields have barely risen. Soils have become less fertile, and hunger has become more widespread. Despite the clear evidence of failure, international donors and African governments have largely ignored the demand of faith leaders, farmers, and civil society to shift their support to agroecology and other farmer-centered approaches. Today, we are here once again to demand change. You will hear today about one, an open letter. We have an open letter from African faith leaders to the Gates Foundation demanding reparations for the harms caused by AGRA and its other Green Revolution programs. Two, the urgent food crisis unfolding in Zambia, caused in part by the failing Green Revolution initiatives. And three, results of an investigation by the Alliance for Food Sovereignty in Africa into evidence of AGRA's continued efforts to undermine farmer-led agroecological movements. I will introduce each speaker before we jump into our program. We have Mary Sakala, who's a farmer from Mumbwa District in Zambia and the chairperson of the Rural Women Assembly. Mary leads are grassroots movements across Southern Africa, uniting small-scale farmers, peasants, and rural workers in pursuit of food and seed sovereignty. We have also Million Bele, who is the General Coordinator of the Alliance for Food Sovereignty in Africa, the largest civil society movement in Africa, and a member of the International Panel of Experts on the Sustainable of Food Systems, IPES Food. For over two decades, Million has been leading the struggle for agroecology and the rights of local communities for seed and food sovereignty. We also have this today, Ferdinand Wafula, who is a farmer and agroecology trainer and coordinating officer of the Biogardening Innovations, Biogi, a Kenyan nonprofit in Vihiga County, Western Kenya. Biogi advances ecological and natural farming principles through farmer-to-farmer agroecological innovation and knowledge sharing. Bishop Takalani Isaac Mufamadi is a distinguished religious leader and a senior pastor of the Grace Tabernacle Full Gospel Church of God in Astorville, Durban, South Africa, and author of Crossroad, Women in Ministry, and Who Am I in This Journey? Driven by his principles, he is the founder of Here I Am, Send Me, a community development initiative where he has helped to launch two agriculture cooperatives in Gumunguzi, Northern Zululand. As we continue, we want to ask, and this question goes to Dr. Million Belay, how are donors like the Gates Foundation continuing to shape African agriculture policy towards industrial agriculture and through which organizations? Dr. Belay, you have the floor. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Anne. Thanks a lot for this opportunity. I think it all starts with shaping the narrative. African population is increasing. Food security problem is, as we know, the major problem in Africa, malnutrition, and all that. So the solution that they present is to give priority to business to feed Africa. That's why in all of the policies that are forwarded in Africa, business is given a prominent place. And Africa cannot feed itself without agrochemicals. Africa should reorient its agriculture to market, you know, market-based agriculture. And also, you know, Africa cannot feed itself with tired seeds. So we need GMOs and hybrid seeds. So these are the narratives. And based on these narratives, after they have shaped the thinking of the elites in Africa, then they come up with a range of policy initiative and strategy initiative, and they usurp the strategic process of so many African countries, even counties like Vihiga, according to our report. So they influence the major policies in Africa. For example, I was part of the post-Malabo process. You know, Africa has produced, African governments have agreed on a 10-year policy in 2003, a 10-year strategy. 2014, they came up and they came back and they called it the Malabo strategy. Now in 2024, they are going to produce another strategy, which they might call the Kampala strategy. It's a 10-year plan. It's a consequential document. Most of the processes that are held in Africa are facilitated by the Alliance for Green Revolution in Africa. So these are the ways that they are influencing the policies. I'm not saying that African governments have no agency. They do also have agency, but they are tied up, you know, with debt and other money challenges, which opens the door for the foundations like the Gates Foundation and other big funders to come and influence our policies and our strategies. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Belay. As you follow this up, as I follow up this question, maybe you can explain how they support through, for example, the fertilizer program. But also, my question to you is, who stands to gain from this policy direction?
You answered it. You know, I think, you know, the path that they are leading us is into a kind of agriculture where we cannot farm without the use of agrochemicals. So in this fertilizer subsidizing initiatives, which are called FISP and others, our farmers are getting used to using artificial fertilizers and pesticides. And because of the war between Ukraine and Russia, what cost has increased? The cost of artificial fertilizers. Because of that, the cost of everything has increased in Africa. Cost of oil and fuel and everything. So this is one way of benefits that they are getting. I'm not saying that there are no other actors who are benefiting from this also. You know, a range of consultants all over Africa are also benefiting from that. And governments, through their support, they make sure that Africa is, what do you call it, a raw material exporting nation, continent, which will be processed outside of the continent and coming back through different forms. So there are a number of actors who are benefiting from this, and this is facilitated by actors, including AGRA.
Dr. Belay, let's move to Bishop Takalani. Yesterday, on the 27th of August, 2024, the Southern Africa Faith Communities Environment Institute, SAFSE, released its letter to the Gates Foundation and other donors demanding reparations for Green Revolution damages. Bishop, as a faith leader, what are your concerns when it comes to industrial agriculture?
Yesterday, yes, we, through the Southern African Faith Communities Environment Institute, a letter was released together with the collective leadership of religious leaders. And so this was set aside or was focusing to the Pandas of Accra. And so we, as faith leaders, we have the responsibility as custodians of the earth and of our faith communities to call out injustice and ensure the equitable sharing of the resources for all, particularly the most vulnerable. That's why we're calling reparation. Agra itself and the Gates Foundation, as well as the seed and agrochemical companies, they are false prophets of food security. They claim to be messiahs of the hungry and the poor, but they have failed dismally to deliver because of the industrialization approach, which degrades soils, destroys biodiversity, and places corporate profit over people. It is an immoral, it is sinful, and unjust. Surely, Gates and big agri businesses are playing God. Where really is the conscience in this? That's a question we're asking, more especially for the poor and for those people that are small farmers that are being affected by this, and also the destruction of our biodiversity. That's where we are, and that's what we are focusing in as religious leaders together with CEFC.
Thank you, Bishop Takalani. What are these reparations you're calling for when you tell us about all these challenges or damages that have been done? What reparations are you calling for?
We're not looking at reparations that are one-sided, but we're looking at restoring the dignity of people. We're looking at restoring the inheritance of people. For example, we're calling for the foundation that they need to support the agroecology movement on the continent and its work to bring about sustenance, inclusive and equitable food system in Africa. Also, we're calling them to come into partnership promoting the adoption of policy framework for agroecology, including seed and agricultural laws that favor the right of African communities over corporations, funding African-based efforts that center on local knowledge system and community, investing in ecology, namely the scaling up of organic input supply and chain, and supporting the scaling up of participatory farmer-led research and community seed banking. It's our desire to see these reparations done in order that Africa can have its dignity back.
Thank you, Bishop Takalani. Let's move to our farmer, Mary Sakala from Zambia. Zambia is currently living the nightmare of the Green Revolution. And today we have Mary Sakala, a Zambian farmer and member of the Rural Women Assembly, who has witnessed firsthand a recent report from the Africa Center for Biodiversity called it a food system collapse. Mary, tell us about the food crisis in Zambia and its relationships to the Green Revolution.
Thank you, Anne. Farming for us as small-scale farmers in Zambia has become really expensive. Despite us being a good number of 80% that fit into food security, the current system is really relying on external inputs, the fertilizer, the herbicides, the pesticides, the foliar fat, and the seeds. Now, if we are talking of seeds, we are talking about the seeds that are found in the shops, which are maize, soya beans, and a bit of some beans. These are the main crops we get. even when we have issues of subsidies. So once a small-scale farmer is affected by the climate shocks, which are the droughts and the floods, you find that that farmer will go down to zero. We call it zero because that farmer would have lost every income and every food, leaving a farmer totally without food at a household. So the government has really tried to come up with programs like farmer input support programs, where 1.2 million is benefiting from the same. There's another program called cost sharing, where a farmer is supposed to meet with the government on the middle 50-50 of payment. There's another program that provides loans. But all the same, you'll find that despite doing so, the climate shocks has really brought these finances that the government lose down to zero, leaving farmers without cash or any food. The policies that we have nowadays, really, we see that they support the big fish in the ocean. These big fish are the commercial people. We call them big fish in our country. You'll find that the same people who are supported and protected by the policy do not even consider to produce the food that we call food as citizens of Zambia, because for them it's about profits and building their incomes, of course. These people go for wheat, rice and soybeans, because that make very expensive to produce. So as a farmer, I think there is need for our government policies or policymakers to look into the issues of the food or the seeds that are in the hands of farmers, because they are a diverse. There's need to do that, because if we don't do that, looking at the current situation, especially with rural women farmers, it will be a really collapse of the food system in the country.
Maybe Mary, you can tell us, what do you think will take to make build the resilience of the smallholder farmer in Zambia? Looking at especially the women, what would really take to build that resilience?
When these multi corporates came in, they found us with our own seed, our own food. We need to build the food sovereignty. We need also issues that will not make our farming very expensive. For example, agroecology, where we can use natural resources to build up our soil fertility. We need also to keep our own seeds and continue the diverse, using the diverse of seeds, so that we are food secured and part of nutrition as well is there. So there's need to do to put in place some policies that will really support that.
Now back to Dr. Bele, Million Bele. As you explained earlier, AGRA is continuing to use its funding and influence to promote industrial agriculture and undermine efforts at the continental, national and local levels to pursue more sustainable approaches. The African Food Sovereignty Alliance has undertaken an investigation into AGRA's activities, documenting cases in which AGRA is interfering in efforts by local and national governments and even grassroots groups to chart a different path. Several cases are summarized in a recent briefing paper, including a case in Kenya. Million, would you be able to share more about this?
Yes, I think the report is in progress. It will be much more complete. I think the two case studies are from Kenya and Zambia. The Kenyan case is very much interesting. I think a revolution is happening in Kenya. As we know, the counties, small counties, I think 10 of them came together 2-3 days ago and have said that they want agroecology and this is rolling. But there was an agroecology policy development process in Vihiga county. As our brother would explain later on, the suddenly, you know, representatives from Agra came and, you know, they are usurping the process as it is. At the continental level, as I said, they have actually influenced so many processes, you know. As an example, we can talk the strategy, agricultural strategy of Kenya and Ghana at some point, and the fertilizer strategy of Tanzania. You know, they are doing this kind of processes. Previously, as we know, when it started, Agra started to focus on direct support to food security and whatever. So after 15 years, and we did the research and we said that food security didn't decrease. People, the level of poverty in Africa has increased. Productivity has not increased that much. Actually, the implementations have resulted in the erosion of our seeds. Because of this, Agra has increasingly shifted its strategy to policy influence. Now it's focusing on policy influence. It's much more dangerous because once a policy is changed, it stays for some time. So both at the continental level, at the country level, even in that county's level, the influence is being felt now.
Thank you, Million. My next question goes to Ferdinand Wafula from BioG. You are a farmer practicing and advocating for agroecology in the western part of Kenya. Tell us about your work and what you have observed regarding Agra's involvement in your region. How has this affected your work as a farmer and a practitioner? Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Anne. Much gratitude for this pass. Our work on the ground is gaining traction with farmers, and we are offering alternatives to synthetic inputs by making biofertilizers that are now recognized to be very effective. So these inputs are ecologically based and produced locally, alongside others like traditional open seeds that are diverse and perform better with the changing climate. And they are also readily accessible by farmers. We're also part of the 15 centers. We're doing this work as part of 15 centers, our healthy soil, our healthy food centers, in partnership with the Alliance for Food Sovereignty in Africa. And some of these elements are now recognized in a draft agroecology policy for Vihiga in Western Kenya, and whose technical working group that I'm part of has been engaging for the last 2 years. And the background of this policy development process in the counties is that Kenya has 47 counties, and each with a county government, which is supposed to be autonomous in its right to develop agricultural policy. In the absence of the county policies, then it's the national policy that takes precedence.
Thank you. Ferdinand, maybe you could speak a bit slower with small pauses to support our audience.
Yeah, so I was saying the background to this policy development is that Kenya has 47 counties, and each with a county government, and they're supposed to be autonomous in their right to develop agricultural policies. And the engagements have been very inclusive. And as we came to the end of this process, just last month, out of nowhere, the Food and Land Use Coalition, in short, they call themselves FOLU, which is an arm of Agra, has boarded that policy is passed. We haven't seen their presence in any meetings that we've been having for the last 2 years, but all of a sudden, they are included in the policy texts. And we see added texts like climate smart and agri-food systems mentioned under strategies on production and soil health. And we feel this may conflict with the agroecology elements and principles, the way we are practicing with farmers. And our conclusion on this is that it's clear that Agra are actually pulling strings behind the scenes. Thank you.
Thank you, Ferdinand. That's very interesting. But just to move away from that and the fact that You have been very instrumental in working on the agroecology policy in Vihiga and, of course, at the national level in Kenya. How would you define agroecology and what would you say are the advantages that it offers to farmers and communities?
Well, Anne, you know, if you are a farmer in the conventional or industrial system, you are subjected to synthetic inputs whose prices are determined by the global market. So you take loans and you can get in debt. Let me tell you something about the farmers that I work with and those that I know. They were in difficult situations with their food systems, even a household food accessibility. And some of them were trapped into loaning facility for inputs that resulted in them getting worried every planting season. They observed that their soils were becoming barren. And I also observed that when we started working with them, actually, they were at pains feeding their families. But then after training, they have now incorporated elements that have mentioned above. I mentioned before, high food diversity that is delicious and tastier. For instance, they can eat cassava and beans, pumpkins, and interchange that with a variety of leafy vegetables and not just relying on maize alone or beans. And this is making their own, they're also making their own biofertilizers that perform better with their soils restored, and they can also see more soil organisms. So they feel more connected with their land, and they are happy and are more resilient now. This is what agroecology is all about. This is my understanding of agroecology: making connections with food traditions through practices that conserve and work with biological systems.
Thank you, Ferdinand. Back to Dr. Million Belay from AFSA. What do you think African governments and donors should be supporting instead of continuing to invest in the Green Revolution agenda?
So there are so many ways of supporting agroecology. First, there are so many initiatives all over Africa. So many initiatives. There is a possibility of bringing all them up and scaling them up. Currently, the amount of money flowing into Africa for agroecology is less than 5 to 10%. So that has to increase. More and more farmers should practice agroecology. That's the most important thing. And second, agroecology, as we know, is it's a practice, it's a science, and a social movement. So the science of agroecology has to move also, you know? We need that support also. And farmers, a number of farmers organizations are there out there, and they want to organize, they want to learn from each other, and they want that resources to support them. Now, as Alliance for Food Sovereignty in Africa, we have started a new program starting 2021, which we call the Agroecological Entrepreneurship. Between producing agroecologically and consuming agroecologically produced food, there's a lot of work for youth, mostly for women, you know? So entrepreneurship, so they can sell, they can buy agroecologically produced food from farmers, they can process it, they can package it, they can market it, and the consumers will eat healthy food. So agroecological entrepreneurship should be supported, and there are markets, these small markets, all over Africa, strong, you know, in the rural lands, which we call territorial markets. And these markets are social, cultural, economic, even environmental spaces. But they are neglected. And when these small places develop, they are swallowed by develop. We should pay attention also to these small territorial markets because they are at the heart of the food sovereignty of Africa. So in terms of practice, there are a range of fertilizing mechanisms. Fertilizing the soil under the biggest umbrella of biofertilizers, I think that needs to be supported, and agroforestry and this kind of initiatives are should be supported. And there is a lot to support, both for funders and governments. And thank you.
Thank you very much to our wonderful speakers, Dr. Belay, Ferdinand, Mary, and Bishop Takalani. We'll now transition to a period of question and answer, and I think this will be very interesting. But we'll begin with the few questions that I have received. There is an anonymous participant who's saying, who are these faith communities and faith leaders endorsing the letter? That I can that question can be answered by Bishop Takalani. Then there's also a question from Matteo Civilini from Climate Home News. Are you asking for financial reparations from AGRA and the Gates Foundation? And if so, do you have a figure for how much would be needed to repair the damage you believe their program has done? Bishop Takalani, if you could start off and then we can have a Million Belay and the others answering that as we pick the other questions. Bishop, you have the floor.
Thanks, Anne. We have 157 signatories and it's spread through our continent. The reality and the challenge is that these pesticides are destroying not only the land, but the water table. Now, we only look at the land, but also the water table has been affected. So the whole farm life has been affected. So when it comes to reparations, we said we're not only looking at monetary, but you're looking also at the restoration of that land, that which has been damaged. It takes long to restore land and to be able to bring it to its former nourishing levels. And also, you're also looking at when these small farmers who are in the villages that have been affected by this, for them also is not only the land that is affected, but their economic standing is affected. So you find that if they were making few shillings a week, they're no more making that because of their yield is no more good. Their land, not only is the land, but their inheritance. This land are inheritance. They have been from generation to generation. They lose that. Now, you cannot just only look at monetary. We also look at, since you got resources, retrain those people. We're asking for retraining. We're asking for support to them. We're asking for also investing in these people that are in the land. So it is not just monetary. It's holistic because we're looking at restoring the dignity of the people, not just if you are wealthy, you can just throw money and it means nothing. But will the dignity be restored just only by money? Or will you partner with those people that you have harmed for reconciliation, walking the journey with them, training them again, refurbishing the soil and the water table that has been affected? This is what we are asking for. It's not one-sided only. Thank you,
Bishop. Million, could you come in and speak a bit about it as Bishop thinks about, there is a follow-up where I would like to ask. Have you come up with some figure for the reparation? And if so, how much would that be to repair the damage you believe the program has done? Maybe Bishop, if you're ready, have you come up with a figure?
I think that will take a research because you can't just thumb suck a figure. You have to look at what, because you're looking at a continent, and then so everyone will, as Dr. Belly was saying, there are policies and everything that have been affected. There are people that have been affected. So when you do research of the damages, then together as different countries, we can be able to say how much damage. How much is damaged where, and how much can it revitalize what is damaged? So the figure cannot be thumbsucked, it has to be researched.
Thank you very much, Bishop. I think Bishop has tackled that. Million, the Alliance for Food Sovereignty in Africa has been at the forefront of promoting youth. In fact, I think in October, you're having the African Youth for Agroecology coming up in October. There's a question here from an anonymous person. How can you spread awareness on what's going on, especially to the youth who are enticed by initiatives that seek to promote the green revolution through various models, agribusiness, climate smart agriculture, and all that?
Thank you very much, Anne. AFSA has a youth wing, a growing youth wing, very, very active youth wing. I think, and as you have said, we have this 1,000 Youth Summit coming in October. So the next generation is very much important. And they're very, very active. I'm very, very much encouraged by African youth. We have seen the recent Gen Z movement in Kenya, you know, how they are questioning the international financial system, you know, and the influence of the international financial architecture on Africa or African governance. So that's a big agenda, and that has an implication also on the future of African agriculture. As I said, when our governments are constrained with money, they go and borrow, and they are in debt. When they are in debt, they don't have money to invest on, you know, on healthy kind of agriculture. Because a number of governments that I spoke to talk about food sovereignty, but they don't have the money to do so. So when there is a money shortage, in comes whom? Organizations like Agra, supported by big funders, because the money comes from through another door. So it's a big win for so many African governments to get money that's coming either through African Development Bank or through Agra. So that's part of the problem, but the youths are moving.
But further to that, Dr. Bele, I know the Alliance for a Green Revolution in Africa recently changed its name to Agra and dropped the Green Revolution. Is this shift a reflection of just a marketing rebrand? Or has the organization actually shifted its strategies away from the misguided emphasis on toxic pesticides, synthetic fertilizers, pesticide-dependent GMOs, and towards agroecological practices and policies? Do you think this is real or it's marketing?
I think they were under pressure at some point. Even the meeting that's going to happen, which they called the African Food System Summit, it was previously called African Green Revolution Forum. So they removed the Green Revolution and they put the food system now. Why? Because we have actually worked to really make them ashamed of the name of the Green Revolution in their name. So they have changed it. But does that change translate into action is another question. And two recent processes can testify that it has not changed. Big Africa-led meetings, you know, the recent fertilizer meeting that took place in Nairobi, which was hugely funded by Agra. I think the main thrust of that meeting was increasing the usage of agrochemicals. And also the CADA process, you know, we did the analysis of the whole document, the draft document, which is going to be signed by African governments as a Kampala Declaration next year in January. And the process, when you look at the whole document, is business-led agriculture, large agriculture, climate-smart agriculture. It's not, there's nothing like, you know, agroecology or caring for African traditional food system and whatever. So
it's business as usual.
It's only name change.
Thank you, Dr. Bele. Let me move to Ferdinand Wafula from Biology in Kenya. Is there a mechanism, or have you heard of a mechanism in place for communities to voice grievances or report negative outcomes from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation projects? And how are these grievances addressed? Have you seen any system towards that?
Yes, thank you, Anne. What we are doing on the ground and what I'm seeing happening on the ground is that there's a lot of awareness, and farmers are now becoming more aware because of the effects of the Green Revolution they've seen on their farms. For instance, when we talk about soils becoming dead, and now when they are using agroecology, they are reviving that. It's taken them a long time, and we're hoping that through these policy processes and their involvement in Kenya and in the counties nowadays, we have what we call public participation. And farmers are now becoming more aware on their rights. And I think as we get into this space more, some of the issues that will be addressed. And when we talk about reporting these cases, it's not just reporting the cases, but, you know, it's just restoring their dignity, because as colleagues have said here, farmers' dignity, you know, all this period they've been doing and using the industrial agriculture and inputs, and some of their knowledge is also lost, and that dignity is also lost. And that is the kind of reparation that is being emphasized here. But we are doing more awareness, hoping that we also have structures in place to be able to address this, and farmers can be able to address this considering that they have evidence on what has happened and how their livelihoods were actually destroyed over a period of time. Thank you.
To Mary Sakala, our farmer from Zambia, we have a question from Mark Sano. He asks, to what extent are small-scale farmers engaging in transitioning to organic systems? Because he mentions that certification systems have banned the use of most toxic pesticides and genetically engineered seeds. So these are barriers. If not, what are the barriers for the transitioning to agroecology or organic agriculture? Maybe you can help us answer that, Mary.
Yeah, the transitioning is really small. So a few farmers have realized that this is getting us nowhere, despite the adoption being small. But what I can say is that in terms of the food, there's the food that is mainly neglected, the food that we usually produce using the recycled seeds. That food is neglected. So part of agroecology, the use of food seeds is at a higher pace, but the use of chemicals is also at a higher pace. So the transitioning is slow in terms of the inputs, fertilizer and chemicals. People are still using that. But with the seeds, especially the women, have realized that I think we need to go back to using our seeds. Otherwise, it's a struggle.
Now that you speak about our local seeds, Mary, what you call the farmer-managed seed systems, what are farmers doing to maintain control over their seeds and farming practices instead of falling into the trap of being dependent on external inputs? Outputs, and such as the input from organizations that are funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. What are you doing as farmers?
As farmers, especially women, I think we've identified some seed savers under the practical action research. And nowadays we have some community seed banks where people get the seeds and return by the end of the day in small quantities. So what we are doing is we are really to promote our own seed. We are being identified by what we eat. So as Africans, we eat African food. So while we are really trying to bring back the seed.
Thank you, Mary. Let me go back to Million. I have like three questions for you, which I am sure you'll answer ably. There's a question about how has any form of protest been planned at the Agra event besides the letter mentioned? Simon Allison asks, AFSA has been very critical of Agra and the Gates Foundation for several years. Have they engaged AFSA on this issue? And if so, what was their position? Number three, Million, having been engaged in the climate movement, are there any discussions around seeking reparation funds through the loss and damage fund, or are there alternative funding sources? And finally, what are the movements doing in each country to ensure continuity in this fight?
Protest, no. You cannot even think of that in Rwanda. I mean, I don't know whether they know the context there. Yes, we have engaged with Agra, and me talked with Agra. They've called for the meeting. They've asked us, and we said yes in the end. And we went there, and I think the meeting was for them to convince us how good they are. So it didn't go very well, and we didn't meet them again. Continuity, I think AFSA members all over Africa are doing whatever they can to expose what the Alliance is doing, and other actors are doing. It's not only Agra, but there are a number of actors, it's the main actor, that's why we are focusing on Agra. Reparation from through loss and damage, I think that process is still very young, under UNFCCC, as you all know. It doesn't include also the impact by companies like this. It's a climate impact, flooding and whatever. It doesn't include it yet. Loss and damage doesn't include yet, impacts by multinational companies. There were two questions, if I could respond quickly, Anne. One is shifting the focus of Agra to agroecology. I think this is a tall order. AGRA started to discuss agroecology. They organized 2-3 meetings here and there on agroecology. I remember speaking also in one of the capacity building processes that they organized. They invited me. I said, this is talking about agroecology, why not? But taking agroecology as a transformational agenda and making it as the core of their work, no. I haven't seen that yet. But what I want to talk about is the shifting to agroecology by farmers. It's not easy. As Mary has said, it's not easy. And you have asked me on how we can support farmers. It's one of the most critical areas. There are a number of farmers who want to shift. But once you have gone through using agrochemicals, you cannot shift like that. You need between 3 to 5 years for your land to heal. So it is an opportunity cost for the farmers to go directly to agroecology. They need to be supported, they need to be helped. I've been told that in Germany, for example, if somebody wants to change from conventional farming to organic agriculture, they will be supported by the government for 3 years. You see, we don't have this kind of luxury right now in Africa. So this kind of support should be considered also.
Thank you, Million. Maybe I go to Bishop Takalani. And what kind of responses do you get from donors like the Gates Foundation when you table such petitions or letters? I know SAFSEI has been at the forefront. Last year, they did a letter and to the Gates and to AGRA. What kind of responses do you get, Bishop Takalani?
The challenging factor when you deal with multi companies that has a lot of support is that sometimes the process becomes tedious and they can play a game of tiring you up than to get you going with what you want. But it is the research that SAFSEI puts into its work that will still stand the test of time, that if this generation does not get what we are crying for, all this research will still be there to be followed up. And we can be able to see the fruitfulness of this, if not in our time or our generation, but the next generation will be able to find some of this great research that has been done and the work that has been done. Engagement, yes, they will engage you. But we're hoping and trusting that the engagement will be very fruitful in times coming, more especially with this letter that we have sent to them, because we really are desiring to see the shift of funding supporting these farming to agroecology processes. We also would also want to see, as Dr. Bailey said, the reversing of policies, for them to engage us on those. And we see them committing to reverse some of this destructive policies. That will be great to us. And also we hope that they will respect the local knowledge of these farmers, as we've heard with the Kenyan farmers and stuff. Respect that, because it's not only that. They are medicinal and they are material and they are fuel and they are food impact that comes with that. If there will be that respect, that is not just only this organization that are speaking to us, but the respect of humanity, that we are affecting their food, their fuel, their medicine and material livelihood. So if they could just change policy. Now, we're hoping that they will start there, because policy stays long, yeah, and policies are destructive, because policies also influence governments and they influence villages and stuff like that. If we could get them to commit to say that we are eradicating some of these policies and push them to that point, we want to push them to that point of committing, and that will be great to us.
Thank you, Bishop. Let me bring in Mary Sakala, who has been very active on the ground level. And a question maybe would like to ask you, Mary, is that, is there a way we can create more public awareness at the grassroots level so that the local communities, the farmers, the groups that are practicing organic and agroecology can bring this message in local languages to the local communities who may not have internet access and ICT, and are being targeted by the push For adoption of a green revolution, for example, what we are seeing with the 1 acre fund and other lobbies that are promoting these industrial revolution models. How do you think we can reach out to the communities to sensitize them so that we do not have this kind of capture by industry?
Mostly, what I know is that farmers believe in seeing. We need to build more evidence. We need to bring out best practices so that they see using their eyes, they hear and also see. So we also need to continue sensitize them on agroecology, because you have some other effects whereby lots of people are suffering from cancer, the cancer that we never used to see. So we need to tell them about the costs and the beauty of using agroecology and using recycled seed, as my brother, the bishop, said. I think we need to build more evidence, build the voices, and also continue sensitize the farmers.
Thank you, Mary. That's very important to ensure that the messaging gets out there. To Ferdinand Wafula, when you spoke about the process or the influence of AGRA in the development of the agroecology policy in Vihiga County, and the challenges and the fact that they came in last minute and were pushing trying to influence the process. One person asked, how do you know that AGRA unduly influenced the policy process there or tried? And does AGRA talk about agroecology? What does AFSA think they mean when they say their agroecology, they are speaking about agroecology? Ferdinand, do you have the floor?
Yes, thank you. Well, we've interacted with their persons who are said to be part of the food and land coalition. Mm-hmm. And they've openly told us that that's an arm of AGRA. So that's how we came to know that they are actually present. And as I said, we've had a series of meetings for the 2 years, and we just were done with the draft and with the public participation when we noted. It's when we were coming to the tail end of the process that now we see some of the texts and acknowledgements that they have contributed, that, for example, Folu has also contributed in this process, while we had not engaged with them, because this is a public space. And that we came to that conclusion that they're actually operating behind the scenes.
Let me move to the next question that goes to Bishop Takalani. Bishop, someone is asking, wouldn't asking Gates to fund agroecology just legitimize and perpetuate fundamentally problematic structures than like the Gates Foundation? That question is a bit tricky. Someone is asking.
I spoke about a policy. Is that when a person brings destruction, you can do it twofold. You can judge or you can rehabilitate. Judgment and rehabilitation, they look almost the same, but they are not the same. As it stands, they are the polluters, whether we like it or not. So polluters have to pay for their pollution. Now, how are we going to do it without asking them to restore what they messed up? Yes, there's a biblical saying, if you permit me, the wealth of the unjust is set aside for the just. I think we, by taking that to for the good, not for the destruction, for the good, it's what I think it's fine important, because they are not paying for anything but the pollution that they've caused and the cleanup that they've caused. We have heard that it takes five years to rehabilitate the ground that have been destroyed for it. Now, we don't have the luxury of money in Africa. Germany, probably they do have. America, they do have, but we don't. So if we could get that money, or we could get them to fund that, to rehabilitate what they've destroyed, that'll be good for us.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Bishop Takalani, Mary Sakala, Dr. Belay, and Ferdinand Wafula. I think we've had a very engaging session, kindly. And to conclude, I want to say this. Our message to the international donors and African governments is clear. Your green revolution has failed. it is doing more harm than good. There are serious human consequences from these failing policies. Hunger is not falling on the continent, as AGRA and its donors promised. It has increased more than half. It was well past our time to change course to support agroecology and other farmer-centered approaches.
Thank you for listening to Witness Radio Rebroadcast Program.